This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Meera Sivasodhi. Live and learn happening at the moment, and we're going to dissect the budget 2016 as far as the bottom 40% of the population is concerned. Dato Dr. Denison Jayasuriya, Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies from University Kebangsaan, Malaysia, joins us. Welcome, Dr. Denison. It's been a long time since I actually saw you. After every budget, it's almost inevitable. We have you in to talk about...
Thank you. Thank you very much for...
You're welcome. To discuss, you know, this segment of society. I mean, it was themed the prospering the rakyat, this budget 2016, and it was a balancing act for the Prime Minister looking to stimulate the economy while lowering the cost of living. And the whole budget was to strike a balance between the capital economy and the people economy. So what did you think, Dr. Denison? I mean, how far did it go to address these people that we're going to be discussing today, the bottom 40%?
Thank you for this invitation. I think, like previous budgets, the focus has been on the capital economy and the people economy. Definitely this time the PM had, I think, slightly more goodies to give out to people, and some people will be happy with that kind of an approach. So prospering the rakyat in one sense, having the people in mind is a theme. There are some good attempts in the budget that I noticed, and then I have some critical points I'll tell.
Of course, but Dr. Denison, you know, we always talk about a people's budget. I mean, is that cliche? I mean, we obviously put people first all the time. What do you think? When do you not consider it a people's budget?
Yeah, I think because the Prime Minister and his team are basically politicians, and government as a whole is out there to serve the people. So I think they want to address people's concerns, and some of it is being addressed by cash transfers. But others looking at some of these points from a more critical point of view and a long-term position will then raise questions on whether some efforts taken creates more dependency, or whether it enables people or empowers people to become more resilient, not just at the economic level, but at the levels. And those are some critical points as well. But I think the budget has the people in mind, like the 2015 budget as well.
Did the 2015 budget serve us well?
I think at least at the point it 2015 is consistent with previous budgets in addressing some of the critical concerns, and it set the stage for the 11th Malaysia Plan. But the question now is the 2016 budget, which is the first budget of the 11th Plan, fulfilling what was the analysis of the 11th Plan for the bottom 40%, and does it take it through in the first year of the 5 years? And are the indicators and measures going to lead? If one looked at a superficial level, one would say, great, money is thrown here and there. But if one looked at a more critical outlook, then one would say it might be creating more dependency and not really empowerment. But there are some good things, as I mentioned, and one, of course, is this proficiency of BM and English, which has been quite a contentious issue, and the setting aside of pilot testing in 300 schools as a first phase is, I think, very good. Both BM and English as a language are strengthening. I think it could be enlarged, where 135 million is set aside within this. The food supplement to children benefiting about 550,000 kids on the e-kase list with breakfast and recess food, I think is another good measure, because there have been research on nutrition, body weight of child, and poverty, especially rural interior areas, will be good. But I think there has to be very strong monitoring of these contractors on the quality of the food, the nutrition, that they don't undersupply to what government has provided within this context. I think the allocation to Sabah and Sarawak, I know much of the money is in infrastructure, highways and all, but for the B40, I think a contentious issue was the land rights and customary issues. And there they have made some allocation, 20 million to Sabah, 30 million to Sarawak on mapping and customary land survey. I think the allocation could have been a bit more because the whole impact of the Sohakam report and other issues beyond mapping could have been addressed. I think on urban housing, the allocation of 155 million for renovation through the housing and local government is, I think, a welcomed theme. It could have been upped a little bit because the high density view, compare the density in the rural areas and urban areas, then repair of lifts, public spaces. I think it impacts the urban poor and the bottom 40. So 155 million across all the urban centers is actually very little. The government could have looked at a bit more in this line. So there could be many more such discussions of details that others could have picked up. But these were a few that came to me as I read through. But if one asked, what was the 11th plan's analysis of the B40? Where are they failing or what are their critical problems? The 11th plan very well documented it, like low education, high dropout rate, low skills, low entrepreneurship, the high cost of living, and lack of social safety net, inability and issues related to transport and health, then if we use this benchmark of 9 or so issues that the 11th plan highlighted, then I think the 11th plan would actually fall short. This budget will fall short because in the area of addressing cost of living through BRIM is one key indicator. But the others like entrepreneurship, skills, training, education is more for the new ones coming out of the institutions rather than the older ones who are already there. So unless they are able to match it, it's then taking, like I explained to you this morning, I was in a government department and a lady who was the cleaner, adjusted the fan for me. So I then asked her to sit down and I wanted to find out how long she has been working in this department. And she told me something that was quite revealing. She's a cleaner, but she's a contract worker. Her salary is less than 900 ringgit. She works a full day. She's not given any annual leave. And if she skips a job, salary is cut. And they cut EPF and SOCSO, and she's uncertain about that. So a lady like that, and she does confess that the BRIM was helpful for her. She got 3 payments of BRIM, 300 each time. And that's helpful because her husband is not working. One child is working. Others are married. So for such a lady, BRIM gives her the additional 80 or so ringgit a month, or quarterly, or once in 4 months, she got this 300, which is a bulk for someone earning 900. It's very substantive. So if one compared it for someone earning 4,000, getting 80 or 300 as the first payment, it's not that much. But what does it do for this lady? Actually, it doesn't improve. It just helps ease her problem in a temporary, in a small way. But it doesn't build her capacity. It doesn't increase her productivity. It doesn't contribute to her now going to earn more money because she has become a better cleaner, or her outlook is better, or she gets a better job. I think she must be in her 50s already. But she needs it. She needs the job. If not, she can't support the family and things of that sort. So if we take then, there would be sizable number of people, because the 11th plan is telling us there are 2.7 million people in incomes below 2,537, which is the mean medium income that the B40 fall under. This 2.7 million, in contrast, the BRIM is reaching out to 4.7 million. The budget is now allocating at a range going right up to 1,000 in four categories, totaling 5.9 billion for 2016, reaching 4.7 million people. So
that's almost double. It's
So now the question will now come. It was 11th plan identified 2.7 million in the B40. 4.7 million people are benefiting. For some, it makes a major difference. If you're earning 1,000 ringgit a month or below, and to get an additional 1,000 ringgit, it's like a bonus for you for that year, and it goes a long way and differently. But it doesn't do anything to improve their capacity, their productivity. It's a handout. So government has to then incrementally increase that for her. So how would that lady whom I spoke to today increase her income from 2,500 to 5,200 before 2020? I think it's impossible for her or her family to do it.
So what are your thoughts? That BRIM should be gradually reduced year on year?
I would feel that the public policy planners have in mind that cash transfers or direct impact of some kind is useful. I have a counter suggestion to this, and it's a thought, and we can discuss it, and maybe some of your hearers can also take up. That means for every person who is now entitled, I would feel they should reduce the contributions and strictly follow a means test. Not people. So if you take 3,000, then keep the B40 at 3,000. So you cannot be raising it to 4,000 every year. Next year, raise it to 5,000. So why don't we follow the 11th plan in the categories that it used? Now, one would then say, if a lady like this sweeper that I met today and a cleaner in an office, how would we help her earn more money? That's the objective. So we tell her on the weekends or in the evening, you go to the community college and spend an hour or 2 hours, whether a month or weekly. Each time you go, you will get a cash voucher of some kind. The course in the community college then is an adult learning program. It can introduce learning of English or communication. It can be self-grooming. It can be improving your current work skill. And the community college then begins to cater. If you're a taxi driver, so why would a taxi driver want to? So you give him a cash voucher. He takes an hour or two at the community center. He begins to learn how to speak English. He begins to talk to tourists or somebody, where are the tourist spots and things like that. It is possible if he gets on a good day, a client that wants him to drive to the East Coast or to Malacca or to PD, he will have a good knowledge. He can communicate. It might increase the number of people who come to him, or the cleaner, or a cook, or a guard. So how do we improve people's through the contributions? I think where the Department of Social Welfare gives funds to people who are elderly or who are unable to work due to age, health, or other complications, then you need to raise the assistance provided. I think it's means tested. But for somebody else who needs that additional skill or support, Then you have intervention through voluntary sector, private sector, or government sector to push them up.
And that has not been looked at.
I don't think they have the program e-kase, e-krija, work, or e-nyaga, which is business, for that level. They are struggling. I think it's better then to strengthen those programs so that any money given should help them generate more rather than just subsidize costs. Because the danger now is everybody wants more. They do not want to give up even the little that they have got. So it creates a dependency. And this is not good. This is not good for a developing country. It's not good where resources are limited. And you're talking about 5.9 million this way going. The cash handouts of 100 ringgit for families below 3,000 hits to more than 350 million. That money, I feel, for books or other materials like the book voucher could be put in libraries. You know? Those days when I was younger, the community had libraries, the school libraries, open it up and encourage people to put the money there so that it's better utilized by the community. So community libraries should be. In none of the budgets I'm not seeing that people now are, you know, creating information centers or strengthening it. You got 350 million. Put it in every squatter or flat area that you have a small library or community centers and help people go there. So if a kid goes to the library and borrows books, then you give them a voucher, you know, for food or meal or transport allowance because you have come. So that way you are, I'm just saying that way government is getting something out. People would say, oh, this is mean. Government should just give it without strings attached. But you want to move people to higher income level and the bottom 40 will struggle either because of knowledge, access to computers, and things of that sort.
Okay.
So that's a key area that we might want to get government to rethink, but that allocation should go to the target group.
GST, we'll come back and find out more about the impact on the bottom 40% of the population up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. Dato Dr. Dennison Jayasuriya, Principal Research Fellow from the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia, with us discussing Budget 2016 and its impact on the bottom 40% of the population. Dr. Dennison, the implementation of the GST seems to have turned out better than expected. What has been the impact on this population?
I would still think there are a lot of negative aspects experienced by the bottom 40, although government has, through this budget, relaxed on more products, food items and things like that. So I think this is where a bit more of looking into areas that it impacts the B40, because it's a clear-cut 6% cut on the things that or additional charge, so it's disproportionate. So I think if government subsidies towards health, like the One Malaysia Clinic, and increase assistance through public transport, the train systems and other things that emerge, because the overall cost is actually going up. So even a cup of tea at the bottom end, you know, just a teh tarik, or even a goreng pisang now has all gone up. So even the poor man's food that they would have to buy is much more. Might have a GST link to it, or it might not have. The overall cost has gone up.
I found it quite mind-boggling, actually. Some of the items which are now zero exempt, Mikolo, dal, almost seemed it had some ethnic link to the exemption.
I think it was very random. Yeah, I think whoever worked out some of these things are then looking at popular food items. I know that dal has a very strong protein value to the content, and it might be popularly used by certain communities and groups. And I think that's where the budget has taken on. And I think the Prime Minister's team or the Treasury might have been looking at ethnic dimensions that will be touch points to people in their application of it. It's good and not so good as well, because I would have felt in other areas the budget seems to be including every sub-ethnic or every ethnic group and identifying or dishing out something for Indians, for Bumiputras, for Sabahan, Sarawakian, for Chinese, for Orang Asli. Then it negates the overall thrust of the 11th plan, which is an inclusive development. While you want disaggregated data collection and analysis to see whether any group is left behind or left out, or gender and things of that sort, I think the thrust of the 2015 budget had a much stronger thing with gender and youth as a key component. This time they have the elements but didn't bring it as a major thrust. So the 2016 budget, for some reason, continues to consolidate this ethnicization of the budget. It's good and bad because people say there's something for me, but it's very easy for someone to just sit down and calculate how much different communities are getting by the very virtue of race-based allocations or ethnic-based allocations. Then you will see tremendous disproportionate allocations. So it would have been better to then say everyone in the bottom 40%, irrespective of ethnicity, which is the thrust of the 11th plan, will have access. So it doesn't matter whether you are Orang Asli, Sabahan, Sarawakian, Indian, Chinese. The delivery system will ensure you will not be alienated. I think that has not come out, and that is one of the drawbacks in the first year of the 11th Malaysia plan delivery. I think there's a gap in it, and a gap in terms of the readiness of the civil service to deliver, because now they have to fulfill all these ethnic categorizations and deliver according to that, rather than use, you know, the most needy and then monitor that no ethnic group is left out.
I mean, the Indian community, for an example, yes, was the largest group of people in the poor category, and almost 500 million ringgit has been allocated for Indian entrepreneurship in the budget.
Yes.
So we could have improved on that and given it out to, you know, all people in the poor category. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that specific allocations and targeting, looking at the disadvantaged experienced by certain communities, are still needed. Actually, the Indian allocation is only 100. I think it was out of the 600 to Tekun, 500 is to the Bumiputra community, and another 50 million, so 100 million, 50 million. Amanaitya is 200, but it's not ethnically linked, so it will be largely Bumiputra women. SEDIC, which is a PM's institution for civil society for the Indian community, is 100 million. Kojadi gets about 90, Chinese villages get 40. So this is what, no, what I'm saying, I'm not saying cut it from an ethnic point of view, but we can group it such that it doesn't matter which ethnic, then you need delivery institutions by ethnic delivery or civil society that's ethnic based to deliver. Then we are reinforcing the ethnicization of the problems. The 11th plan and the public policy, which is linked to now the global document of the Sustainable Development Goals, indicates no one should be left behind. So everyone should have an equal opportunity, one, and you can monitor the outcomes, and that the disparities should not widen in the disaggregated. So data can be collected along ethnic lines, but it's open to anyone. So the civil service or the agency developing should be multi-ethnic, should be multidisciplinary, must be inclusive development oriented, consistent to the 11th Malaysia Plan.
But the Sustainable Development Goals, our Prime Minister has committed in New York, there was a renewal of the Sustainable Development Goals from 2015 to
2030,
yeah.
The next 15 years.
That's right. So is that in line? Is the budget 2016 in line with what we have committed in New York?
I was a little disappointed listening to the budget speech and reading the full text and the coverage of it, that the PM made no reference to his commitments in New York, because it has implications to refugees, because we have undertaken 3,000 Syrian refugees who would be placed here. So, but we made a very strong commitment in New York, and that's good. At the global level, that same commitment should be reminded through Parliament, that the budget should reflect that, because we are quite consistent in the 11th plan and the SDGs Agenda 2030 of inclusive development, bottom 40. The UN also has terms like bottom 40, no one should be left behind, non-discriminatory, inclusive development, gender, indigenous people, minorities, and all disadvantaged groups should have an opportunity. That's the thrust of the 11th plan as well. But by not making any reference to it, I felt we lost a good opportunity to benchmark domestically our commitments internationally. Because it was the first session of Parliament, it opens up this discussion, it reminds the Malaysian public, because I've not heard that emphasis by the PM here or the government laying a strong claim, because that's the agenda for the next 15 years. So in effect, the SDG 2030 has become almost like the past, where the government had an outline perspective plan that governs public policy delivery. So it's the orientation of the civil service, it's the orientation of the politician, it's the orientation of the of all the agencies, because they're going to be evaluated, or they have to present a global report in 5 years' time. Actually, we have no problem in doing that, because Malaysia has a midterm review of the 11th plan. It will do dialogue and discussions for the 12th plan. It will have an evaluation of the 11th. So it does that. But I felt sad that we didn't capture the moment for it and put the framework within that. I would, as I said earlier, the budget falls short of the 11th Malaysia plan, targets and analysis and approach, and the writers didn't frame it in that way, at least for the bottom 40%. It seemed to be more an incremental throw-in for everybody. Everybody seems happy, they're not left out. So the Indians got something, Sabahans got something, Sarawakian, Chinese got something, oh, the Bumiputras got something, their place. So we are then entrenching that framework, which is sad, because we are closer to 2020 now than before. So we should be looking at, okay, B40. Okay, if the largest numbers are Bumiputra, it's the Sabahan, Sarawakian, it's the Orang Asli, there are pockets of Indians in the urban place. How do we improve this? You know? Not by handing out 100 ringgit, 200 ringgit, make the fellow feel happy, but he's not going to reach the 5,000 mark. He's not going to reach the target of a developed nation. The inequalities are going to widen unless government can assure him that you will give him an additional 1,000 ringgit a month. And that's not possible, because our oil is depleting, so we have to increase productivity.
Do you think we will reach the high income nation status?
I think we will, because the bigger economic players, the national average would, And I think the we should have grown faster, but nonetheless we will reach because of bigger companies investing beyond. You got GLCs, you got an active entrepreneurial group. I don't think I'm pessimistic for that, but the inequalities will widen. Because how would you help this lady who is a cleaner, who's earning 900 and take home of 750 or 800 now, how will she improve if it doesn't correlate with her having a higher vision of herself? It corresponds with us wanting to reduce unskilled labor. I go to restaurants, I'm seeing even the cashier on the restaurant is a foreigner, it could be a local barber shop. So we need to create dignity to labor. So, our kids all, and I also studied overseas, and anyone who studied in England, Australia, or somewhere, Canada, all did odd jobs. So how do we get students in their holiday time in KL to work in restaurants, to work in office space as short term? How do we utilize this rather than them just hanging around or not utilizing that time in the workplace? So how do we get young people and the minimum wage or hourly wage that any restaurant or place serves will facilitate towards that? And in Australia, they are doing that. In New Zealand, they are doing that, and students are doing. So how do we move students to also enter, study, and do work, earn something that is worthwhile? But if you're only getting 5 ringgit an hour or something, it might not be worthwhile.
But we have increased the minimum wage to 1,000 ringgit, yes, in the private sector.
Yes.
Do you not think that would help reduce our dependency on foreign workers?
I think this is the struggle with the private sector, and I think government has attempted in this area. And this is one positive move of the budget speech, because for government, they have put it the starting at 1,002. They have also given a minimum to the pensions, which I think is a very good choice for pensioners who have served the country beyond 25 years. But 1,002 is still very low for someone. No? You're an adult, you're working, you are devoting 8 hours. So dignity to work and value of your labor, even just manual or assisting in some way, I think the private sector has to come to this, because we are over dependent on low paid, low skill foreign workers. And as long as our mind is set on bringing Cambodians, Bangladeshis and others in, you're going to have a tough time in moving the economy up. So Malaysians as a whole would have to change in their mindset that we cannot introduce an exploitative system of foreign labor, because we are one ASEAN community. And we just have to listen to the critical documentaries of migrant workers or refugees here. The UNHCR just called for that all those waiting for refugee status to a third country should at least get opportunity to work, because they are here. If you're working in the informal or on the quiet, then there's a stronger exploitative environment. You legalize them because they're here for a year or two. They have a UNHCR card, and their kids should have opportunity to school, healthcare. So this is where the SDG will impact us. If an Indonesian, if a Myanmarese, if a Rohingya, if a South Thailand person is here, they are our brothers, because we are creating a one ASEAN community. So we cannot just see it very singularly as just Malaysians or citizens, non-citizens. We have to move beyond. And SDG provides that framework. And as soon as Malaysians begin to think beyond the framework of just insular Malaysia to ASEAN, to treating people with respect, to give them dignity to work is crucial. And this has to be complemented by public policy that directs it. And private sector, instead of doing all this big so-called CSR, treat your workers well, pay them higher salaries, and some companies do, and you would get better productivity, or train them so that they can come up to that level. If not, you're going to have Malaysians in the bottom 40% who are underperforming even in comparison to migrant workers. And this is a sad stage, because if you allow the trend, you're going to create an underclass that divides us between the top 20 and the bottom 40. And that's going to be sad. It's going to have contestation. There will be enmity. There is rise of certain kind of theft. Because of these rising inequalities and lacking opportunities at the bottom.
What is your report card for Budget 2016, Dr. Dennison?
Mine would be the benchmark of both SDG and the 11th Plan. And my appeal to public policymakers in the Treasury, as well as EPU, to keep on course what they have framed out in the 11th Plan, and keep reminding budget, parliamentary speeches, that they have to be consistent to the 11 as well as SDG. So I think SDG they have to monitor because it's an international commitment. And so the 11th plan as well, they will have to monitor. And so I feel for the bottom 40, if we do not tighten the delivery, the monitoring, the capacity building of local community leaders, you're going to see the bottom really clamoring for more handouts. And then there's a point in which politicians, for votes and other reasons, will have to comply. And that might not be sustainable in the long run.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us, Dr. Dennison Jayasuriya, Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan, Malaysia, on Budget 2016 on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.